You're listening to the Gateway Family Church Podcast. This is the place to find the latest thoughts from Gabriel and Mike Wright, the lead pastors of Gateway Family. Here we go.
We're going to talk about the Lone Ranger. Have you guys seen the Lone Ranger movie yet? Anybody? Raise your hands if you have. Good. That's awesome. Like two of you guys. Awesome. Me and my wife went and watched it. I told her last weekend when we went to Atlanta. I told you guys we did that last weekend, and I told her, I said, look, we need to go see Lone Ranger because I'm preaching a message on it in 2 weeks, and I need to have watched it before I preach a message on it. So we went and saw Lone Ranger, and it's pretty good. It's not bad. You know, it's not the best movie I've ever seen in my life, but at the end of the day, it was a pretty good movie. You need to go see it. It's pretty good. Do you know the story of the Lone Ranger, of who he is and what he did and all that kind of stuff? The Lone Ranger is a guy named John Reed. He's a Texas Ranger. His brother gets killed. In fact, the entire posse that he's after, this one guy, ends up getting killed when they ride into this valley. They get ambushed, and he's the only one left. Well, he's left for dead, and the outlaw actually thinks he's dead, but he's not. And Tonto finds him, right? Okay, so Tonto is like my favorite character because I love Johnny Depp. I think Johnny Depp is a great actor. Have you ever noticed Johnny Depp plays the weirdest actor, the weirdest characters in the world? Yeah, because he's weird. Exactly. He plays Willy Wonka and Jack Sparrow and Edward Scissorhands and. Yeah, just weird. But he's so great at those weird parts. And he did such a good job. But here's the deal. All through the movie, The Lone Ranger and Tonto don't really team up and become who we know the Lone Ranger and Tonto as until probably about three quarters of the way through the movie. Now, they're with each other, but they're not really with each other. Do you follow what I'm saying? Like it's not a great relationship at the beginning of the movie. Tonto is kind of weird. Lone Ranger's kind of weirded out by Tonto. Tonto tries to get Lone Ranger to wear the mask, and he does. And then he feels stupid because the other Indians tell him he looks like an idiot, and all this kind of stuff. And he ends up trying to do everything that he needs to do, trying to avenge his brother's death and all this kind of stuff on his own. All right. And let me tell you right now, there's a big difference between being the Lone Ranger and being the Alone Ranger. That's good. And we need to catch that for all of us today in every aspect of life. It's okay taking a stand for what you believe in. And sometimes you may take that stand alone, but God never meant for any of us to be alone. Even the Lone Ranger had Tonto. He may not have had anybody else with him. But when he finally comes to that point and he realizes that he needs somebody to help him, somebody is better at stuff than he is. Somebody can help offset the weaknesses that he has. Somebody knows how to track. Somebody else knows how to find people. Somebody else knows how to interact with the Indians. Somebody else knows how to do the things that he doesn't quite know how to do. When he figures that out, his life becomes a little bit easier. He's able to do the things that he needs to do, and he has people to help him through. You know, that's like us in life. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is there's a whole lot of, like I said, alone rangers that should be lone rangers. We want to fight against the things that we believe. We want to fight for the things that we believe in. We want to fight against the things that we feel are rising up against Christianity today. But for some reason, we think we can do it on our own. God has not called you to operate by yourself. God hasn't called you to operate by yourself. Do you realize that? And for some reason, we all feel like, I don't need any help, especially us men. Hello? Because as a guy, a lot of times we feel like if we got to ask for help, then we're less of a man because of it. How many of you have ever been lost and you don't want to stop and ask for directions? Sometimes even that little voice on my GPS gets me lost, and I still don't want to stop and ask for directions. You know, Pastor Gabriel, and when Pastor Marcus was here, we were going through this whole thing of moving into our new office and all this kind of stuff. And for some reason, I noticed that all of like the handyman jobs around the office were starting to go to Gabriel and Marcus. And I was ending up like, you know, painting trim or something like that. But all of like the cool table saw stuff and hammering stuff and drilling stuff in walls, they were doing all of it. And then I'd come out there and I'd be like, hey, can I help? No, we got it, man. We got it. You go do what you're doing. And then I found out later that they don't think I'm too handy and that they've got to help me. if I'm doing anything handy. I still don't think that's the fact. Maybe that's me being a man and thinking that I can do it by myself. Anyway, I remember one time I used to work for a pool company. And in Montgomery, it's called Hughes Pools, and I worked there for about 5 years. And at this point in my lifetime, I was a warehouse guy. So all I did was stock chemicals. I'd help customers every now and then when they were a little busy on the showroom floor. But we had the retail side of the business, which was like chemicals, pool toys, you know, that kind of thing. We had the construction side of the business, which was selling in-ground pools to people, you know, going out, looking over the land, all that kind of stuff to see how to put the pool in. And then we had the service side of the business, which was what it sounds like, going out, working on pool pumps and, you know, replacing pool liners and all that kind of stuff. Well, one day we just had this huge shipment of pool furniture, patio furniture that had come in, and it was always the warehouse guy's job to make sure the patio furniture got put where it was supposed to go in the warehouse. Well, you know, that doesn't sound too bad, except for one shipment a year, the parking lot was just slam-packed with so many boxes of furniture that you couldn't park, and I'm not joking. Like, we literally had to park in the parking lot next to us because there was so much furniture. It was when the new line of furniture came out. We sent all of our stuff that we still hadn't stocked back, and they had this new furniture out. Well, we had been working, me and these other two high school guys, and we had been putting all this stuff up, and it was raining, and we were getting soaking wet, and all the boxes the furniture was in was getting soaking wet, and we were so tired. We wanted to go home, and it was like 5:30, and we were supposed to get off at 4 that day, and we still had another hour or two's worth of work, and one of the service guys pulls in his pickup truck. And he's got this big pool liner that he's just taken out of a pool in the back of his pickup truck. And his guy that usually works with him is out that day. And so he can't unload it on his own, okay? And so he asks for help. Now remember, it is pouring rain. And when you take a liner out of a pool, most of the time these pools have been sitting for a long time. And so the liners are slimy and they're nasty. They've got algae all over them. There's usually bugs and just junk all in them. And they don't clean those liners when they take them out. They just pull them out, fold them all up, and put them in the back of the truck and take them back to the store and put it in the dumpster, right? Well, man, I want to go home. And we can't keep doing what we're doing until we get his pickup truck unloaded and get his pickup out of the way so we can keep doing furniture, right? Well, all these two other guys, they're like, no, I'm not doing anything while it's raining. I'm not going to get wet. I'm like, bro, we have been wet for like 3 hours now. I said, look, I don't care what y'all do. I can do this by myself. I don't need y'all. You know, I was mad. And so I pulled the tailgate down. There was no reason I should be trying to lift this liner on my own, first off, because it's huge. So I grab it, and I pick it up. Any of you that know me know that I'm a little bit clumsy, just a tad. So I pick this whole liner up. Thanks, Gerald. Gerald can tell you a story. That's true. So I've still got a bruise, by the way. I just want you to know that. I pick this liner up, and I go walking like this across the parking lot trying to get the dumpster. Then all of a sudden, there's this flap that's on top of the liner like this. And the liner goes, whoop. And it was just like a flood of algae and stuff in my mouth, in my eyes. And I'm sitting there, and I just drop it, and it goes everywhere. And I stumble back, and I'm kind of like this. And I turn around, and all three of those dudes were laying on the ground laughing at me. Can you believe that? Because I tried to do it myself, and wouldn't listen to good sound judgment that said, get some help. The bottom line is, if you don't want algae in your mouth, don't move a pool liner by yourself. If you want to make it through this life, don't try to do it yourself, whether it's physically or whether it's spiritually, guys. We cannot function the way that we're meant to function to the capacity that God has built us to function at if we try to do everything on our own. Pastor Gabriel, as the lead pastor of this church, he hires staff to help him, to assist him accomplish the goals that God has set forth for Gateway Family Church. As staff, we pull in a dream team of volunteers that allow us that help us to accomplish the goals that God has set forth for Gateway Family Church. We cannot accomplish the purposes or what we have to do in our life on our own. We have to learn that God never meant for us to go through this life alone. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12 says this, two people are better off than one, For if they can help each other succeed, if one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. We all have a desire to belong to something. Nobody wants to go through life not belonging to anything. You may think you do, but at some point, you're going to find yourself sitting there going, I just want to be a part of something. I just want to belong to something. I want to show you a chart right now. There's a guy named Abraham Maslow, who's a psychology guy from a long time ago. And if you look at this, Gabriel, this is when I would like to have that TV that we talk about sometimes. But if you look at this, if you look right above physiological needs and safety and security needs, what's the third thing? Love and belonging. These are the five things that Maslow says that every human being needs to feel fulfilled in life. You got to have your basic physiological needs, your food, your water, your sleep, that kind of thing. You got to have those things to function physically. On top of that, you've got to have your safety and security. You've got to feel like you're safe. That's why we lock our doors. That's why we put alarm systems in. That's why we have somebody around us that makes us feel a little safer. But on top of that, after safety and security and after your physiological needs, the next thing that psychologists will tell you that human beings need is to belong to something. You cannot make it through life alone. God has told us that. Psychology has told us that. But even more than that, Jesus Christ himself tells us that. You know that to the core of who you are, that you have to belong to something. See, we can't help each other through things if we never spend time together. The problem is too many people come to church today, and they come in, don't get involved in anything, don't talk to anyone, and then walk away and wonder why their life is still a wreck. But I follow Jesus. I read my Bible. I pray. Do you go to church? Sometimes. Do you actually interact with anybody? No. Do you get involved in the dream team? No. Do you get involved in a small group? No. You have to have interaction with people of like faith to be able to function at the level that you need to function. Hebrews 10, 24 to 25 says, let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. Let us not neglect our meeting together. Did you hear that? Let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near. You need to hear two parts in this verse. Let us think of ways to what? Motivate one another. And in verse 25, but encourage one another. You can't motivate and encourage each other if you never spend any time with each other. It's hard to develop relationships that are going to be beneficial relationships to you if you never spend any time with the people you're trying to develop a relationship with. And if the only time you ever see anybody is in this room, in this time frame every week, it's not going to help you. Let me tell you right now, you're never going to develop a relationship, a deep bond, friendship kind of bond with every single person in this room. Much less when this grows and we have more people here, it becomes even more necessary that you find a group that you can get involved in, that you can find people that connect with you, that have the same kind of interest as you, so that you come in here in this big group and you get fed from your pastors, and then you go to that smaller group and you share what's going on in your life and you deepen your walk spiritually. You have to have that to be able to be what you're supposed to be. That's why small groups are so vital to what we do here. Look at Luke chapter 5. We're going to start in chapter 1 and verse 1. Pastor Gabriel brought this up, I guess, a couple of months ago. And I'm not sure if he talked about this on a Sunday morning or on a Wednesday night. But either way, we're going to bring it back up again. Luke chapter 5, starting in verse 1, we're going to read to verse 11. And I want you to listen to this. It goes like this. One day as Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, great crowds pressed in on him to listen to the word of God. He noticed two empty boats at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. Stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, its owner, to push it out into the water. So he sat in the boat and taught the crowds from there. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, go out to where it's deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish. Jesus said, I'm tired. I've been preaching. I'm around this big old crowd. I'm ready to go fishing. You know, some preachers play golf. Jesus wanted to fish, right? So Jesus wanted to go fish. He wanted to have some fun. So he goes out and says, let's go out to the deep water, catch some fish. Master, Simon replied, we worked hard all last night and didn't catch a thing. But if you say so, I'll let the nets down again. And this time their nets were so full of fish, they began to tear. You got to understand where they were living right then. Peter and his buddies have been fishing all night. This is not like some, you know, Saturday fishing trip with your kids. This is like making a living, I've got to catch some fish or my family doesn't eat kind of fishing. All right, so you got to understand how bummed out they would actually be. They're sitting on the shore and they're listening to Jesus talk as they wash their nets. I can imagine after being out all night long and not catching a thing for your job, not having anything to sell at the market to feed your family, not to do anything that you need to do, and you're listening to Jesus preach, you're probably going, man, I just want to go home. I mean, I love you, Jesus, but you know, at the end of the day, let me just kind of move on with my day. I'm really tired. I've been out all night. And then Jesus gets in the boat and has the nerve to say, hey, can you push out a little bit so I can talk to these people? Can you imagine what Peter was thinking? Peter's like, bro, really? Like, seriously, I've been in that boat all night. I don't want to see the inside of that boat anymore right now. But Peter does it, and he pushes out. And then he gets done preaching, and Peter's like, okay, good. We can go back to the shore now. I can finish washing my nets. I can go home. Nope, Jesus says, hey, man, let's go fishing. We're in this boat. Let's not waste it. And Peter's like, okay, yay. But he says, Jesus, we've been out there all night and haven't caught a thing. Basically, he's saying, I don't know what good it's going to do, but if you want to do it, I guess we'll do it. And I can just think of what Peter was thinking. Now, we don't know all the ins and outs of what's going through Peter's head. We know that Peter was not following Jesus at this time. This is when Peter is called to follow Jesus. So, you know, Peter may be thinking, okay, this is kind of an important guy. Everybody's wanting to listen to him. I'm going to have a few minutes to spend with him. All right, let's see what he's all about. All right, we'll go fishing. Let's just see what you're doing here. And Jesus says, let down your nets and see what you catch. And Peter does it. And there's, if you look at a lot of different translations, some translations say that Peter let down a net. When Jesus said, let down your nets, plural. And there's a whole different sermon that goes on there. Because the amount of what Peter let down was what was filled. If Peter would have let down every single net, everything would have been filled. So what are you letting down for the blessings that God wants to give you? That's a whole other sermon. But moving on, it ended up that he let down the nets. There was a huge catch of fish, so much so that the people that he called, that the boat started to sink, he had to call his partners to come over, take some of the fish, and their boat began to sink, and they finally got it in. And at that moment, Peter falls down at Jesus' feet and says, you got to go away from me. I can't be in your presence anymore because I've seen what you did, and I now know who you are, and I am a sinful man. See, when you connect with Jesus, it changes everything. When you really see Jesus for who he is, from the core of who you are, it changes your perception of everything. The light of who Jesus is starts to burn your insides, and you start to figure out that you're a sinful person that's lost without Jesus Christ in your life. But what I want you guys to see is there is a lesson about small groups in this story. And I never saw this before until we started talking about it in a staff meeting, like I said, a few months ago. And that is this. Jesus was standing on the shore of the Sea of Galilee preaching to a huge crowd, right? Huge crowd. They got a tidbit. They got one big word of what Jesus had to share with them. Jesus couldn't sit down and talk to every single person in that crowd individually. But then when it was over, he got in that boat with Peter and his partners. There was only a handful of them. And they went out on the water, and they hung out, and they fished. And they saw a miracle like they had never seen in their lives. They got a calling that they had never thought they would receive. They followed Jesus from that point forward with more zeal than they had ever followed any kind of law in their life. Because things happen in a small group that can't happen in a large group. Jesus couldn't have the same interaction with that huge crowd as he could with Peter and his buddies in the fishing boat. Now see, what you need to get out of this is that small groups are one of the most important things you can ever be a part of in a church. We're in the process of boosting our small groups and trying to get everybody on the same page with our small groups. And we've got a few that we're offering just during the summertime right now on Wednesday nights. And then we've got a few that meet at different points of the week. But then when fall hits, we're going to be opening up small groups for you to get involved in. And we want not only for you to be involved, but we want for you to lead one. If you have a desire to lead a small group, all you got to do is come talk to one of us staff members, preferably Beverly Carter, because she's coordinating all that. So if you come talk to me or Pastor Gabriel, we're going to say, go talk to Beverly Carter. But we will follow up with you and make sure that that happened. At the end of the day, small groups are a huge part of what we do, and they are a very, very important part of what we do. Small groups accomplish four things. Number one is a fellowship and fun with fellow believers. Look at where the small group happened with Jesus. It didn't happen in the synagogue. It didn't happen in a temple. It happened on a fishing boat while they were catching fish. Do you like to fish? I love to fish. Jesus had fun and fellowship while he met the needs of the people that were in a small group. See, small groups are about fun and fellowship. Number two, they're about accountability. It gives you a chance to be accountable to someone on a deeper level than just walking into a church on Sunday morning. They account for, number three, spiritual growth. They give you the opportunity to go deeper into the calling of God on your life, deeper into what God wants from you or has for you in the heavenly realms where you can't go in the morning service. And number four, they provide an avenue for evangelism. Let me tell you right now, it's a whole lot easier to invite someone or for someone to agree to come with you to go hang out at somebody's house, to play cards, or to eat some, Beverly's like, woo, to play cards or to eat a meal or just to hang out with a bunch of people, watch a football game or something like that, than it is for you to say, hey, come on Sunday mornings and sit through this service with me. If you can get them connected to your small group and let God start working on their hearts during that time that you've got with them, it's going to be such an easier a transition to get them to come to a Sunday morning service. What you need to realize is, guys, these Sunday morning services at Gateway, they are for people that don't know Jesus Christ yet. We love you. We want you to be here. And I'm pretty sure, but if you're like me, you get a lot out of what Pastor Gabriel brings every single Sunday, a lot of spiritual growth out of what he brings. But at the end of the day, we talk all the time at the office that our goal, our purpose on Sunday mornings is to see people's lives changed by the power of Jesus Christ, to see people give their hearts to God. Because if we don't see that happening, then we need to change what we're doing. Because that's the purpose of everything that we are saved for. We're not saved to go to heaven. We're not saved to have a relationship with Jesus Christ only. We're not saved to be able to have some fellowship with some cool people. We are saved so that we can enlist in the army of God to put on that armor we've been talking about, to pick up that weapon we've been talking about, and go into a world and pull people out of the mouth of hell. That's why we're saved. And if we don't have that as a purpose, then what are we doing? So a small group allows us, as this is the purpose for bringing people in, getting people saved, a small group allows that time for you to go spiritually deeper. It allows you to have that time to share, to bring back, to talk about dreams that you have, to talk about issues that you're having, and to connect with people on a one-on-one basis. So small groups can be a lot of things. Small groups can be Bible studies. We did a small group last fall that was just playing football on Sunday afternoons. And that was a blast. And let me tell you something. We had, I guess, about six or seven of us from the church that went out there to play. And by the time we ended that small group semester, we had what, Gabriel? I guess about 14, 15? And still, it was only six or seven of us that were from the church. And the rest of them were all guys that just came out there, that were out there the first week or two, and they started asking us every Sunday, y'all gonna be back next week? Y'all gonna be here next week? Y'all gonna be here next week? And we were. And what we kept telling them is at the end of every day that we would play football, we would just bring everybody together and say, hey, man, we love you guys. God loves you guys. Is there anything that we can pray with you about? Is there anything you're struggling with? Anything that you need to talk about? We're pastors. We love you. We want to be there for you. And these guys, the first week, they were just like, no, I'm good, man. I'm good. But as those weeks moved on, man, we had guys open up saying, man, I'm having surgery. Man, my mom's got cancer. My parents are going through a divorce. This is this and that is that. I'm struggling with this addiction. And it was just amazing that as you spend time together doing something as innocuous as throwing a football around, people start connecting with each other and they start becoming friends, not because of anything else other than fellowship. When you put fellowship in the mix, that's why it's so important, because when you put it in the mix, it allows people to open up. It allows people to start getting comfortable, and it allows you to start sharing with people and start progressing in your faith. That's why we have small groups. So there's four ways that I've come up with, or that I think that you can make small groups work for you, okay? There's four ways, as I'm thinking about this, as I'm studying about small groups and scripture and the things that we do at Gateway, there's four ways that you can make small groups work for you. And see, the problem is a lot of times in church, we go, okay, that's great, but small groups just really isn't my thing. I've never really done small groups, never really been involved in small groups. And so you hear us talk about small groups from up here in this pulpit, but then you never really bite the bullet and decide to get involved. And that brings me to this first point. The only way small groups are going to work for you is if you make an effort to do it. It's just like anything else in life. You can say you're going to do it all day long, but until you actually make an effort to get involved, you're never going to get involved. We can say all day long, we've got 84 small groups for you to get involved in, but if you never come, they're never going to work. We can say all day long, hey, we want you guys to form a small group, and it doesn't have to be anything big and crazy. Find something you're already doing in the week and just invite 5 or 6 people to come do it with you. Find something you enjoy. I remember we were looking at through Church of the Highlands, a small group booklet that they have at one point. This was a couple of years back, 2 or 3 years back. And we were looking at some of the small groups that they offered at Church of the Highlands. You know, one thing that I saw that I thought was just awesome? They offered a 24 small group. This was back when 24 was still on TV. They had a small group that would get together every Monday or Thursday, whenever it was 24 came on. They would get together. They would bring something for dinner. Everybody would bring a little covered dish or something. And then they would just hang out and watch 24. They would pray. They'd share a little bit, and they'd go home. It's that simple. But you have to make an effort. If you don't make an effort, you're never going to get involved. So find a group, sign up, and go. Put yourself out there and just see what happens. You're going to meet new friends. You're going to deepen your walk with Christ. And you're going to see people's lives changed. I mean, does that sound good to you? It does to me. That's what I want. But see, it's a two-way street. You've got to get involved. But those of you that are already involved in a small group, it's up to you to go out and get people into the small group. Do you follow what I'm saying? You can't just say, you know, okay, well, I'm comfortable with us four that we have here, us five that we have here. No, go out and invite people to come in with you. Those that are in the church that you don't think are involved in a small group, approach them about it. Say, hey, are you involved anywhere right now? Are you going to a small group anywhere? Oh, you're not? Okay, come with me. This is what we do. I think you'll really enjoy it. Find people that you can invite to your small group, and let's see what happens. Number two is this. You've got to be open to the people around you. You're not going to get anything out of a small group unless you go into it with the open mind and the opinion that I'm going to be completely open about what's going on in my life. Now, that's a lot easier said than done. A whole lot easier said than done. Because a lot of times you don't know who you can trust. Sometimes you might not know everybody there. But at the end of the day, if you want to progress in your faith, if you want to progress and not having to face this world alone, being able to do more for Jesus Christ, then be open, because that's how you start to grow. If you're not honest with who you are, if you're not honest with where you're at, you're never going to get to where you want to be. And I said a million times that If you want to plan a trip from Birmingham to St. Louis, you're not going to start in Los Angeles on a map. You're going to start in Birmingham. Because if you're not honest with where you're at, you're never going to get to where you're going. You have to be honest about where you're at and be able to be open with what you're dealing with, what you're going through, the things that you're struggling with. Because if you're open, I guarantee you there are people in that group that either are going through the same thing you're going through, have gone through the same thing you're going through, or will go through the same thing that you're going through. And it will allow you to be able to communicate that. Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Now, how does iron sharpen iron? It knocks off all the impurities. It knocks off all of the nicks and the cuts and all that kind of stuff to make that thing sharper. It's never fun getting hit with an iron instrument. It's never easy to open up. It's never easy to make change. But when you've got somebody there that can help you and say, bro, I'm telling you the truth. I'm just being honest with you. I'm here for you. That's what it's all about, and it helps. So number two is be open to the people around you. And number three is this, and this sounds so funny, so let me explain this for a minute. Keep it quiet. Okay, now let me explain that one a little bit. You can't expect people to be open unless they expect you to be confidential. Gossip will kill a small group quicker than anything else. If somebody comes in and you know, I'm in a small group with Pastor Gabriel and I say blah 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 blah, this is what I'm dealing with, me and you know my wife are having issues or whatever, and this is the only people that I've told, and then I hear from somebody else outside of that group, hey man, I heard you guys are having issues. I'm done right there. I'm not sharing anything else in that group. We have to be able to keep things in confidence that are told in a small group setting. It's important that people feel like it's a safe place. That they feel like that it's not the place where they're going to get kicked when they're down, or their stuff is going to be shared all over the church. You ever heard the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me? Can't be farther from the truth. And let me just add this in. Prayer request time is not gossip time. Come on, that's good. And sometimes we turn it into that at church. You know, we'll say, okay, hey, you know, before we close on, does anybody have anything you need prayer about? Anything you got? Anything? Anybody got anything you're going through, dealing with? Oh yeah, let me tell you about Missy. Man, she has been having some issues with her and her husband. You know, I think he's beating her. I'm not sure about that, but I really do think so. And you know, the other day, I saw she had her checkbook open, and I saw she had a negative balance in her checkbook. And I just really think we need to be praying for Missy and John, okay? See, that's not a prayer request. That is gossiping. Missy and John don't want you sharing all of their stuff through hearsay in the middle of a small group during prayer time. Don't let gossip be shrouded as prayer time. Don't let gossip be shrouded as, I just want you guys to know this so you can be praying. That is not okay. That is not okay. Luke 6:31 says, do to others as you would have them do to you. Do you want people sharing all your stuff all over town? No. Then if you don't want that, then don't do it to anybody else. When you get in that small group and people begin to start opening up, you know, Pastor Gabriel's told the story about a guy that used to go, and I don't remember the whole story, but used to go to breakfast or something like that with this big group of guys. And that's interesting. Hang on. That's a first. Well, if that would have fallen, it would have hit Caleb's guitar that time. It's better. I'm just playing. So anyway, there's this guy that had this men's small group, and they would come, they would eat breakfast, and he would just ask the same thing every day. How are you doing? How's everything going in your life? And you know, as it started, it went around the table and just, good, everything's good, no problems, everything's great. And it just went on and on and on. But then as the weeks went on, people started opening up a little bit more and a little bit more. And it got to the point where somebody, you know, finally shared some major tidbit of something they had been dealing with for weeks and weeks, because they started feeling comfortable that nobody was going to be going out and spreading their stuff all over everything. You understand that? If we're going to ask you to be open, if we're going to ask other people to be open, we have to be able to keep in confidence what they say, or small groups will never work. Growth will not work. So we've got to keep it quiet. We've got to keep it, my brain just blanked. We got to keep it quiet, and we've got to be open. We got to make an effort. And then last but not least, and this is my, oh wait, before I get to that, I want to tell you this. James 3, verse 5 talks about the tongue. I'm not going to read this whole thing to you, but it talks about how the tongue can just destroy everything. It talks about what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark, and that the tongue itself, men can tame animals and birds and everything else, but they can't tame the tongue, that it's a restless evil. So if you go throughout life and you're always spreading stuff about people, you're doing way more harm than good for the kingdom of God. So keep your tongue in check. It's not easy to do that, but we do that by every day saying, God, help me to only speak blessings, not cursings. Help me only to build people up, not tear people down. So the last thing is this. We have to have fun. Keep it fun. Keep it fun. We make an effort. We're open. We keep it quiet. But we got to keep it fun. Jesus himself went fishing in his little small group. We played football. We talked about that. We've got people that do run in small groups and people that watch TV shows and all this kind of stuff. There's nothing wrong with having a Bible study. But even in a Bible study, you're still having fun because you like the people you're hanging out with. Acts chapter 2, verse 42 and then 44 through 47 says this, all the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, and to fellowships, and to sharing of meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. Verse 44, and all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshiped together at the temple each day. They met in homes for the Lord's Supper and shared their meals with great joy and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. They had fun together. Yes, the Bible says right there that they met together for worship and they spent time like we're doing now. But at the end of the day, they had meals in people's homes. They enjoyed the goodwill of people. They spent time together. I'm telling you, you can't go have a meal with someone and not enjoy it. If you're going to a Mexican restaurant and your boss orders coffee, that's a different story. But at the end of the day, when you're invited to somebody's house for a meal, you're going to enjoy yourself. You're going to have conversation. You're going to talk. You're going to laugh. You're going to have fun. So even if it comes down to you're just hanging out, keep it fun. Because if it's not fun, it's not going to get people coming back. If people aren't enjoying themselves being there, they're not going to come back. People don't like what's going on, they're not going to come back. So keep it fun. There's going to be times that spiritual growth is going to present itself. Everything in a small group should turn itself towards a deepened spiritual relationship. It should turn itself towards bringing people to a deeper level with God. It should bring itself towards pulling people in. But if we don't have fellowship and fun involved in it, it's just going to be serious, serious, serious all the time. And I guarantee you, even Jesus wasn't serious, serious, serious all the time. The personality of Jesus was a fiery personality. He enjoyed life. He enjoyed hanging out with people. He even had his own small group within his disciples. He had Peter, James, and John that he took to a deeper level many times. In the garden, he asked Peter, James, and John to go farther with him and to pray with him. Now, they didn't really do so hot in that instance, but they did. He did ask them to. He took them up on the Mount of Transfiguration, away from the rest of the disciples, because Jesus knew in that small group, these people that he connected with on a little bit of a deeper level than maybe everybody else, they could help each other. He could help them on a deeper level. Small groups are important. If we know the personality of Jesus Christ himself, and if our goal is to pattern ourselves after Jesus Christ and the love that he's given for us, the life that he's placed inside of us, then our small groups should give us the exact same personality that Jesus himself had. You should give yourselves opportunity to win the lost in that small group. You should give yourselves opportunities to draw people in and to make it bigger and, you know, eventually split off into other small groups. It should give you an opportunity to fellowship with the people that you enjoy being around, because that's who Jesus was. But see, you can't begin to function in a small group in those capacities until you know Jesus Christ on a level that he is your Savior, but not only your Savior, he's your guide. He's the one that leads you. He's the one that protects you. He is the only one that you need standing with you at those times when you feel like nobody else is. Because when you've got that Jesus, when you've got the love that he gives you, then you start wanting that personality to come out in everything you do. So you start going to a small group, and that personality begins to come out even more. And if you can get that personality right, if you can connect with Jesus on that level, that's when you're going to start seeing your life begin to change. You're going to start seeing things around you begin to change. You're going to start seeing people being drawn to you. Hebrews 13:5 says, I will never fail you, and I will never abandon you. Matthew 28:20 says, be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Jesus himself said, I am never going to leave you. I'm never going to fail you. I'm with you through everything that you go through, through thick or thin, whatever you're dealing with, I'm there for you. Some of you guys right now feel like everything is lost. You feel like you've got nobody walking with you. You feel like you are the alone ranger instead of the lone ranger. But there's Jesus who said, I'll never leave you. I will never fail you. He's the friend that sits closer than a brother. You know, I know that Lone Ranger was kind of the movie that we kind of built the thought on today, but I was reminded of another movie that was Lord of the Rings, and I don't know about you guys, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan. I love Lord of the Rings. I think it's a really cool movie, really cool story, but there's a scene that to me just envelops everything we've been talking about today, and that is. The movie is about this little hobbit, little guy named Frodo, and he has to carry this ring, and long story short, he's the only one that can carry the ring, because everybody else that tries to carry it, it's basically the embodiment of evil, and if anybody else tries to carry that ring, it spoils their mind, and they turn very bad very quick, and so Frodo, this little guy, is the only one that can carry it, and he has to carry it to the top of this big volcano called Mount Doom and throw it in, because that's where it was made. That's the only place it can be destroyed. And he's gone through all of these crazy things that he's gone through. And he's lived through all this stuff. And just the stuff that he should never have been able to make it through. And he's got this one guy that stayed with him the whole time. His name is Sam. And he's another little hobbit, just like Frodo. And they've fought giants, and they've fought trolls, and they've fought men, and they've fought just everything you can think of, all the bad stuff, huge spiders and all this stuff. And they finally make it to Mount Doom, and they've been out of food forever, and they don't have any water, and they're walking up the side of the mountain, and finally Frodo falls, and he can't move anymore. And see, what a lot of people may not remember is that earlier in the movie, Sam gets sent away by Frodo. Because he feels like it's going to be too dangerous. Because he feels like he has to do it on his own. He can't make it. Sam isn't, he's going to be more of a hindrance than a help. But Sam finally comes back and he says, I can't leave you. Frodo falls on the mountain. And he says, you know, Sam, all I can do is think about home. He says, I see the Shire, which is where they're from, this lush forest. And he says, I remember having food and I remember going to this place and dancing here and doing this and doing that. And Sam starts talking about it. And he says, Frodo says something about wanting to be back there one day, and Sam says, look, he says, then let's be rid of this thing for once and for all. And this little guy, he reaches down and he says, Mr. Frodo, I may not be able to carry the ring, but I can carry you. And he reaches down and he picks him up and puts him on his shoulder. And this guy is this big, and he's walking up the side of this volcano with Frodo on his shoulder because he knows the value of somebody to walk with you. You need to understand that is a picture of what Jesus does for you. He does not take every bit of pressure off of you. He says, you have this pressure on you, whether that's through your own choices, whether that's through what just life has thrown at you. But you know what? I may not be able to take everything, or I may not take everything off your shoulders, but I can carry you through it. And Jesus reaches down and he picks you up and he says, you don't have to get through this life alone, because baby, I am here for you. I made you. I am your father. And no matter what you do, I will never love you less. I will pick you up and I will walk with you through everything if you'll let me. And because he did that for you, and because he wants to do that for you, he wants you to do that for other people. And that's why small groups are so important, because in here is not the place that you're going to reach down and pick somebody up and say, man, I can't carry your burden for you, but I can help carry you through it. That's what small groups are about. It's a place where you can open up in safety without wondering what's going to happen if I tell somebody, and somebody, instead of saying, man, you are a horrible sinner, you are an awful person, for them to rather look at you and say, I hate what you're going through, but I've dealt with it. I hate what's happened in your life. I hate the hand that you've been dealt, but my Jesus can get you to a deeper place than you've ever been. That is what small groups are about. There's a Jesus that loves every single person in this place today. There's a Jesus that loves every single person in this world today. And yet he still looks down and sees you specifically. He says, you are my child. Let me carry you. Bow your heads and close your eyes with me today.
For listening to the Gateway Family Church podcast. For more information about Gateway, visit www.gatewayfamily.cc.